Today we're reading from the glorious Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 21, entitled Conversation Between Manu and Kardama, verse 56. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. In spite of all this, I ask you, O valiant king, the purpose for which you have come. Whatever it may be, we shall carry it out without reservation. Please repeat after me. In spite of all this, I ask you, O valiant king, the purpose for which you have come here, whatever it may be, we shall carry it out without reservation. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When a guest comes to a friend's house, it is understood that there is some special purpose. Kardama Muni could understand that such a great king as Svayambhuva, although traveling to inspect the condition of his kingdom, must have had some special purpose to come to his hermitage. Thus he prepared himself to fulfill the king's desire. Formerly it was customary that the sages used to go to the kings, and the kings used to visit the sages in their hermitages. Each was glad to fulfill the other's purpose. This reciprocal relationship is called Bhakti Karya. There is a nice verse describing the relationships of mutual beneficial interest between the Brahmana and the Kshatriya. Kshatram Dvijatam Dvijatvam. Kshatram means the royal order, and Dvijatvam means the Brahminical order. The two were meant for mutual interest. The royal order would give protection to the Brahmanas for the cultivation of spiritual advancement in society. And the Brahmanas would give their valuable instruction to the royal order on how the state and the citizens can gradually be elevated in spiritual perfection. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the third canto, 21st chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled Conversation Between Manu and Kardama. Spiritual master, open my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. To those persons who are seriously interested in spiritual life, in escaping from the clutches of the material world and leaving this hellish place, then there's three guides. You can't hear me? Huh? And what, can I do anything? Yeah, that's probably a good... That's good. Is this better? Okay, that's better. For those persons, I will start again. For those persons who are seriously interested in spiritual life, who have become disgusted with life in the material world and want to escape this hellish condition, then they have three guides to leave this place. The Guru, the sadhu and the shastras, right? Of these three, the shastra is the most important, because the sadhu is not a sadhu unless he follows the shastra, and the guru is not a guru unless he follows shastra, and acharya is not an acharya unless he follows shastra. In fact, an acharya is someone who studies the shastra and he lives the shastra. So the shastra is our guide. Srila Prabhupada explains that the shastra is from the same dhatu as astra. So it is a weapon to control us so that we can properly be guided. So in this section of the Bhagavatam, there is a lot of instruction. If I am any closer, if I'm any closer to the mic, I'll be chewing on the mic. I'm too close. Okay. That's better? Okay. Usually they say you're not close enough. Now I'm too close. So, in this section of the Bhagavatam, is that okay? In this section of the Bhagavatam, there are many, many valuable instructions of particularly relevant to ISKCON today. This is specifically about the Grihastha Ashram. How, first of all, how Kardama Muni, a very mysterious thing, he is meditating on Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu appears to him and he asks for a wife. Very unusually, persons who this happens to, they become totally liberated, but he asks for a wife. Of course, if he didn't do that, then it wouldn't be Kapila Dev. So it is part of the Lord's plan. But what is interesting about Kardama Muni is that he knows exactly what he wants in a wife. So this is a, for those who are about, for those, so this is a lesson we can learn. If somebody wants to get married, they should know exactly what they want. So he explains, what does he want? He says, therefore, desiring a girl of like disposition, whom may prove to be a veritable cow of plenty in my married life, to satisfy my lustful desire, I too have sought the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the source of everything, for you are like a desire tree. That's in the 15th verse of this chapter. So he's very concerned about getting the proper girl. That's one lesson that we can learn, because it is the for Veda culture to continue, Krishna's Veda culture to continue, there must be, the ashrams have to properly be guided. There has to be stability. So the bedrock is the Grihastha Ashram. If the Grihastha Ashram is unstable, then everything falls apart. Because there's only two kinds of people in this world. Men and women. Right? And if they can't get along, then there's serious problems. Everything falls apart. So he specifically decided what kind of girl he wants. And then we see another lesson in this verse, in this chapter, is that it's very important that it is the, though he's prayed for this girl, what kind of girl he wants, that it is the girl's side of the family, it's the girl's family which approaches the boy. Why is this important? Because, first of all, the girl has heard about the qualities of Kardama Muni. So she's, her mind is fixed upon, just like Rukmini was fixed upon Krishna. Or how Damayanti was fixed on Nala. She heard about his qualities, her mind was fixed, therefore she could never be moved from that. Once the girl is attached, that's it. Even he was poor, Damayanti did not want to leave Nala, because she has chosen him. That's the nature. So it's an important thing that it comes from the girl's side to the boy. But So in Vedic culture, it's an arranged marriage. So the girl, the parents are involved. So it's not like today, even in India, where they have arranged marriages, but many of them are more deranged than arranged. Because the parents these days are just, they want to offload the girl. Often that's the case. They don't go to sufficient lengths to find the proper husband for the girl, or vice versa, proper wife for the boy. It's not done properly. There's just a big rush, or they can't take the time, or they're more concerned about material things. Whatever the case, they can't get a good astrologer. They can't do it properly. And therefore, even today in India, we're seeing problems. There's too much concern for dowry and things like that. I knew one colonel. He was in charge of the Gorkha regiment in Chennai. He went through 250 boys before he found the proper match for his daughter. That is how much trouble. He loved his daughter so much, that is how much trouble he went to find the right boy for her. That is called an arranged marriage. Not that you just, well, it's, you know, they just put them together because it's more, you know. So that's another point. Another point is, we mentioned dowry. Kardama Muni did not demand a dowry, right? Why is that? Because Manu specifically says that it is a mahapataka to sell your children. So in those days there was more concern about selling the daughters. But today they're selling the boys. Everybody's selling their son for a dowry. Isn't it? Selling your children. That is a mahapataka, a great sin. We wonder why India is having trouble? Just that. And because of this great sin of selling your children, then what is a byproduct of that? Is they kill the daughters, they kill the girls. How many? You know, they made a law against it. They can't do ultrasound to see if you have, you know, because then they abort the girls. They kill the girls when they're children, babies, or because of greed, they kill the wives. Isn't it? Because of this selling of the children, selling of their son. And from anecdotal evidence, it's the women who are involved. It's the mothers, the mother-in-law, and the sister-in-law. The Indian woman's dream is she gets along with her mother-in-law, isn't it? If she can get a good mother-in-law, she's happy. Because otherwise, they get tortured by the mother-in-law, isn't it? I've heard from anecdotal evidence, from cases I've studied, there's a lot of problems in that direction. All of this comes from selling children. So Kardama Muni, there was no dowry. The dowry is given to the girl by the father. It's her property. It belongs to her. It is her inheritance. She's living the family of her father, she gets her share. And Manu says that this money cannot be touched by anybody, not even her sons. It goes to the daughters. The husband can't take it, nobody can take it. The king severely punishes anyone who touches that woman's money because it's hers. Or to speak of killing what they're doing now, you know, under the name of dowry. It's her property, not the husband's property. If she wants to give it of her accord, that's another thing. But it can't be taken from her or pressured from her. That is a crime. So we see Kardama Muni, he was not interested in a dowry. Another interesting thing that we see in this Leela is today there's a controversy in ISKCON, specifically amongst those who are become malechized, become maleches, or are maleches, from Malaysia background is that they do not want to address women as mother. They say they should be addressed as something else. And even some Indian girls, they think this is improper. Or I've heard case where while the person says they feel uncomfortable to address a young girl as mother, because they're old enough to be the father, they feel uncomfortable to address the girl as mother. Right? You've heard this sometimes? So what do we see here? When Swayambhuva Manu leaves his daughter after the marriage, what does he say? The emperor was unable to bear the separation of his daughter. Therefore tears poured from his eyes again and again, drenching his daughter's head as he cried, "My dear mother, my dear daughter." That's in chapter 22, verse 25. Manu, of course, we have to remember who Manu is. He is one of the 12 Mahajanas, you know. He is addressing his own daughter as mother, Amba. So if he can address his daughter as Amba, he's a Mahajan. What to speak of them? The gopis, as young girls, when they were playing, they would also address each other as Ambika, as Amba. They would address each other as mother, sometimes, not every time, but they would also do that. So here Prabhupada says, the word Amba is significant. A father sometimes addresses his daughter in affection as mother. So it is highly proper that we should address, if even the father is addressing his own daughter as mother, we can also address any woman as mother. It's an important point to consider. So many things are being learned here. Then, so it is the Grihastha Ashram, right? So whose ashram? In the Grihastha Ashram, if we think about it, whose ashram is it? Whose ashram is the Grihastha Ashram? We are a Brahmacharya. Let's ask a Grihastha. Whose ashram is the Grihastha Ashram? Is it the wife's ashram? No. It's the husband's ashram. He was in the Gurukul as a Brahmachari, in the ashram of his guru. Then he leaves and he has his own ashram. The first student is his wife. She's his primary student, is the wife. We see there's so many conversations, instructions where Shiva is instructing his wife. He's teaching her. He's his main student. I read one very nice biography of Raghavendra Swami, who is a great acharya in the Madhva Sampradaya. In his Purva Ashram, he was a Grihastha. So he was studying in the mat in Kumbakonam. When he came home from his lessons, he came home, his wife was cooking and serving him food, and while she was doing that, he was teaching her the lesson he had learned that day. Because it is the duty of the husband's family to educate the wife. Why is that? Because for the girl, Manu explains that for the girl, there is no upanayanam. She has all the samskaras that the boy has, except she doesn't get upanayanam. Upanayanam is very important because upanayanam is beginning of entering into Krishna's Vedic civilization. But for the girl, her upanayana, Manu explains, is vivaha. Vivaha samskara, that is her upanayanam. Right? A brahmachari, he only wears three threads in his pavitra. At the time of marriage, what happens? They give another thread. One for him, one for the wife, because now she is also entered into Vedic culture. And Manu explains that just as the brahmachari in the Gurukula, he does his Agnihotra, daily Agnihotra. So the wife, when she is cooking, that's her Agnihotra. That's equivalent to Agnihotra. All the duties the brahmachari did in the ashram of the guru, the same thing the wife does in the ashram of her husband is equivalent. Because this is her Upanayana. This is her entry into Brahminical culture, into Veda culture. And so it's the husband's duty to educate his wife. Right? But not that she stays ignorant. She should also be elevated. She should also become educated. So Kardama Muni is a very elevated person. He's also educating his wife. So it is the Grihastha Ashram, understand, is the ashram of the husband, and it's the wife who is the main student. She is also, because it's a place for cultivating spiritual life. One of the most important sections in this pastime of Kardama Muni and Devahuti is in chapter 23, text 3, where Srila Prabhupada describes how grihasthas should live. In one verse in the purport, everything is there. O Vidura, Devahuti served her husband with intimacy and great respect, with control of the senses, with love and with sweet words. So in this purport, Prabhupada spells the whole thing out. Here two words are very significant. Devahuti served her husband in two ways, Vishrambhena and Ghoravhena. These are two important processes in serving the husband or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada equates the two of them because for her, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yesterday was Madhvacharya's appearance day. Was it disappearance or appearance? Anyway, Madhvacharya also quotes a similar verse where, and we will come to it later, where he says that for the wife, the husband is God. Vishrambhena means with intimacy, and Gauravena means with great reverence. The husband is a very intimate friend. Therefore, the wife must render service just like an intimate friend. And at the same time, she must understand that the husband is superior in position. And thus, she must offer him all respect. And here's a very important part. That if we just understand this, a lot of problems will disappear. A man's psychology and a woman's psychology are different. As constituted by bodily frame, a man always wants to be superior to his wife. And a woman as bodily constituted is naturally inferior to the husband. Thus, the natural instinct is that the husband wants to post himself as superior to the wife. And this must be observed. So Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that it is the natural instinct of the husband. This is just natural. It has to be observed. If it's not observed, then it creates chaos. The male prerogative to want to dominate over the female is not observed, then you're going to have chaos. There'll be fighting, there'll be all kinds of problems will be there. Someone asked, somebody was mentioning, well, you know, why they put the women in the back? Why this? Well, this is the natural thing. The man, it's a natural symptom of the male wanting to show his superiority. Therefore, he puts the female in the back. It's natural. So, we should observe it. Because the male has certain responsibilities. You know, when I was young, I was in the military. And we learned one thing. R-H-I-P. Rank has its privileges. Right? Rank has its privileges. So, therefore, those who have a superior position, they have privileges. But they also have responsibilities. Along with rank and privilege comes responsibility. We'll get to that. Just that, not that you just have the privilege without the responsibility. Even if there is some wrong on the part of the husband, the wife must tolerate it, and thus there will be no misunderstanding between husband and wife. Now, Srila Prabhupada is not just making this up as he goes along. Manu says exactly the same thing. That even if the husband finds pleasure elsewhere, that means he has other women, or he is somehow sinful, the wife should not criticize. Why? Not that the husband will get reaction, but the wife should not criticize, because it's not her place. It's not her duty. It's not her prescribed duty to criticize. Someone else can criticize, his superior or his equal. They can criticize, but not the wife. Devaki, the first six sons of Devaki were killed by Kamsa. Right? See, they were killed. What offense did they commit in their previous life which caused them that they had to be killed by Kamsa? Anybody know? They were the sons of Brahma who criticized Brahma when he did a sinful act of chasing his own daughter. That was not their position to do that. And for doing so, they took that birth. Because it was not their position. It's not that, but someone else, it's other person's duty to correct the husband. Or if that doesn't happen, then he will of course get the karma. But it's not the wife's position. One time, Dayaram Prabhu told me an incident, an anecdote, which demonstrates this. His grandfather controlled the family very tightly. All the sons were very obedient to him. But when he died, one of the sons became a drunkard. And when he was drunk, he would beat his wife. So naturally, she didn't like that too much. But of course, you never argue with a drunken man, otherwise it gets worse. But she complained to her sister-in-laws, and they of course told their husbands. So they told him, don't do that anymore. So he didn't listen to them. So he got drunk again and he beat her. So they took him outside and they beat him black and blue. And he never did it again. But not that she tried to stop him. If she tries, then that just leads to worse situations arise that way. Because sometimes, you know, there are difficult situations in the family. It's not always pleasant. There can be difficulty. The Prabhupada explains here. According to Vedic civilization, Krishna Bhakti means with intimacy, but it must not be familiarity that breeds contempt. So it has to be close enough, but not too close. If it gets too close, then the contempt is there. According to Vedic civilization, a wife cannot call her husband by name. In the present civilization, the wife calls her husband by name, but in Hindu civilization, she does not. Of course, I do know God brothers who God sisters. They observe this. They actually try to follow what Srila Prabhupada's instructions are. The wife never calls her husband by name. He is Prabhu. He is Swami. And he addresses her as Devi. Oh, which reminds me. The reason why the one should never sell the children. Why? There should be no. Why should they never demand dowry for the girl? It's because the girl in her own self is valuable. She is the goddess. She is the Lakshmi. She is the goddess of the house. That's why she's Devi. It's not just flattery. She is the goddess of the house. And it is through her that the fortunes of the family are there. Varahamihira describes, that's of course if you choose the right wife, like Kardava Muni did. Varahamihira describes in Briya Jataka, 23rd chapter, in Stri Jataka, the horoscope of women, that What, there are certain aspects in the horoscope of a woman which she will experience herself. You know, her diseases, things like that. But as he says, that financial situation, status, fame, prestige, all will come to her through her husband. She does not have to do anything extra, because that's her karma. If she has the karma to be wealthy, she doesn't have to do, she just has to do her stri dharma. And the wealth will come to her through her husband. Right? Or if it's poverty, it also will come to her through her husband. Fame will come to her through her husband. She'll become a prestigious position. So, as certain people like to point out, behind every successful man is a woman. Right? You've heard this before? Who's behind all the unsuccessful men? Yes. So, both are there. So, that's why it's important to choose the proper spouse. The father of the girl chooses a proper husband, and vice versa. The boy, because once they're together, then, you know, then the karma is intertwined. Of course, if the child is born, who's also very fortunate, the child will bring fortune to the family. Because if the child, if in his horoscope, shows wealth, well, how is the child going to earn wealth? The father will suddenly get some, you know, money will come to him somehow or other. So all these things, all the karmas become intertwined. When my son of my astrology teacher, when his daughter was born, he looked at her chart, he says, she is the jackpot. After the kid, after the child was born, the whole family prospered, because the child had wealth in it, brought wealth to the family. So these things we have to consider. Thus the inferiority and superiority complexes are recognized. Prabhupada again stressing inferiority and superiority complexes. Dhamena cha. A wife has to learn to control herself even if there is a misunderstanding. One godbrother, he pointed out a very, you could say a tactic or a technique for a wife to smooth out misunderstandings in the family. A practical advice. Just like Lakshmi Devi, she's always massaging the feet of Narayana. So he said, and I know many couples who do this, that every evening, even in spite of the fact that there's misunderstanding, the wife massages the feet of her husband, and he becomes very pacified. And this smooths out. You know, by her displaying her inferior position, being humble, he becomes pacified. If it works for Lakshmi Devi, you know, that's how she achieved perfection, right? Serving the lotus feet. That by hearing, Parikshit achieved perfection. By speaking, Shukadeva achieved perfection. By remembering, Prahlad achieved perfection. And by serving the lotus feet, Lakshmi achieved perfection. So, if it's good enough for her, Pada saving them. Soridena vacha madhurya means always desiring good for the husband and speaking to him with sweet words. A person becomes agitated by so many material contacts in the outside world. Therefore, in his home life, he must be treated by his wife with sweet words. I've heard so many husbands say this. They are out all day struggling, working hard. When they come home, they don't want to fight. They've been fighting as soon as they stepped out the door. When they come home, they just want peace. They want some relief from fighting. So if the wife starts fighting with them, that's the word. They might as well go back out and live in the forest. If the wife is always argumentative, then this creates even more difficulty. If the husband is henpecked by the wife, then this creates major disturbance. As Lord Vishnu said in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, he says, in a house where the woman acts like a man, or where the man is controlled by a woman, one's spiritual life is fruitless, and the place becomes inauspicious. For one whose wife is harsh in speech and action, and who loves to quarrel, the forest is more favorable than the home. Think about this, young men, before you get married. If you go, you might think otherwise, right? Since it is easy to get water, fruits, and peace in the forest, it is considered more auspicious than being with a mean wife. Those who are puppets in the hands of their wives are never sanctified, even by cremation. Even by cremation, they're not sanctified. That's pretty bad. A henpecked husband is not liable to receive the results of any auspicious activities that he performs. The demigods and people of earth always criticize him, and he is bereft of fame and glory. So he should be considered dead, though living in the body. Spoken by Lord Vishnu in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Prakriti Kanda 6. So that is why Vyasadeva writes here that the wife should address the husband with love and with sweet words. Then there's peace in the family. So now, it is the duty of the husband to protect the wife. Right? Protect the wife and to provide for the wife. Now, what does protection mean? Is he like a bodyguard? Walks around with an AK-47? No, if protection means he controls the wife. Everybody here was a child at some time. So, the parents protected you. How did they protect you? Don't do this, do that, don't go there, go here. They controlled you. In the same way, the husband controls his wife. Has to control his wife. But Manu points out that a woman cannot be controlled by force. She can only be controlled if she wants to be controlled. Not by force. She has to voluntarily want to be controlled. Not forcefully. So the husband has to be very careful, because we know, Shastra says, that whatever punya the husband gets, who gets half of it? The wife gets half. But it's not an equal deal. Whatever pap the wife does, who gets half? The husband gets it. It's rank has its privilege, but it also has its responsibility. So if she does something bad, he gets half. Because Manu says that if anybody eats the food cooked by a baby killer, he gets the karma. Just as the guru must accept the karma of the shishya, the ritvik must accept the karma of the yajaman, and the husband has to accept the karma of unfaithful wife. So if the wife is unfaithful, the husband, he also gets the karma. Not just she gets some, he also gets. So therefore, the husband has to control the wife for his own safety and for her benefit. Because the woman has to be protected from two things: bad men, and from herself. Woman has to be protected from herself. Right? Do you know this? Now you do. Here's an example of, even amongst the most elevated people, The wife may do something wrong, and even though the husband tries to protect her, she makes a very bad mistake. Who could be a more elevated couple than Shiva and Parvati? Shiva and Durga. But because she disobeyed her husband, Sati created a chaos. Thousands of brahmanas were killed. She also was killed because she disobeyed her husband. We see in 4th canto, chapter 4. Listen how Sati behaved when she refused. Her husband told her, don't go to the Daksha Yajna. You're not going to like it there. You're going to be sorry. Just listen to me. I'm telling you for your own good. But she didn't want to listen because she wanted to see her family. She had so many desires. She went. Sati felt very sorry at being forbidden to see her relatives at her father's house. And due to affection for them, tears fell from her eyes. Shaking and very much afflicted, she looked at her uncommon husband, Lord Shiva, as if she was going to blast him with her vision. She looked at him like she was going to kill him. That's a Sati. So he was trying to protect her. He's trying to protect her from her own self, not from somebody else. He's trying to protect her from herself, from her own activity, right? So then, what happened? What does Vyasadeva say next? I'm not saying anything. Vyasadeva is saying this. Thereafter, Sati left her husband, Lord Shiva, who had given her half of his body due to affection, breathing very heavily because of anger and bereavement. She went to the house of her father. This less intelligent act was due to her being a weak woman. So he was trying to protect her. She wouldn't accept protection. And as a result, of course, Sati later regretted that she did this. And because of her regret, she gave up her own body. And later they were reunited. But what does Manu say? If the woman refuses to be controlled, then the husband can reject her. He can reject, and there are conditions, of course. It's not, you'd have to, Manu Samhita explains what the conditions are. But if the woman is harsh, if the wife is harsh, she refuses to obey the husband, he can reject her. Get another wife. Now, an important thing to note here is that Devahuti and ladies like Sita, they were following Stri Dharma. Where is it? One devotee, where is he? He was wanting to know what was the essence, he was asking what the essence of their Dharma was. He didn't know himself. They were following Stri Dharma. Yeah? We know, everybody knows what Brahmachari Dharma is? You must know what Brahmachari Dharma, you know. I hope. There's Sannyas Dharma, Grihasa Dharma. But what is Stri Dharma? There's Stri Dharma also. There's no... A woman is not... The women do not have any Varna. Whether they are... In the case of Devahuti, for example, because her father was a Kshatriya, she's a Kshatrini. But she's not a Kshatriya. She's the daughter of a Kshatriya. So now we're going to discuss in relationship to Devahuti. Narada Muni, the Naishtika Brahmachari, is now going to explain to us what is Stri Dharma. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna succinctly explained Varna Ashram, but he didn't mention anything about women. Narada Muni is going to fill that gap. Of course, Bhagavad Gita is part of the Mahabharata. the duties of women are explained in the Mahabharata. The other 99,300 verses explain that kind of thing. So Narada Muni explains here. He says, Strinam cha pati devanam. A woman who has accepted her husband as worshipable as a god. So what are the four characteristics of such a woman? To render service to the husband. To always be favorably disposed toward the husband. To be equally well disposed toward the husband's relatives and friends. And to follow the vows of the husband. These are the four principles to be followed by women described as chaste. Pati devanam. So, to follow the vows of the husband. So, this is a... Devahuti did this, right? First she was living as a princess. She was following the vows of her father. Her father is a Kshatriya. Her mother is following the vows of a Kshatriya. Naturally, as a young girl, she's not independent. She's following the same vows as her parents are following. Now she goes to the ashram of Kardama Muni. What? Takes off all her beautiful saris, takes off all her jewels, puts on simple clothes. Why? Because now she's going to follow the vows of her husband. Her husband is following vows. Same thing was when Agastya Muni married Lopamudra. First thing he told her, take off all these clothes, put on this tree bark. You're going to be following my vows now. That is Stri Dharma. You must follow the vows of the husband as well, because the woman has no varna. She has no varna. She may be, she has different guna, because varna means two things. Chatur varna maya srishtam, guna karma vibhagasha. No matter what guna the woman has, she has only one karma. This karma. This is her karma. If a man is in sattva guna, he has a different karma. Yep. Brahma, karma, sabhavajam, Krishna, Krishna. If he's in Raja guna, he has a different karma as a Kshatriya. If he's in mixed guna, he's a Vaishya. And if he's in Tamaguna, then he's a Shudra. But no matter what guna the girl is in, she has only one karma. This karma. But a girl who's in sattva guna, she should marry a man who's in sattva guna. And the girl who's in Raja guna, she should marry a man in Raja guna. But in this case, she married and she followed his vows. And of course, as we see, like in the case of Draupadi, she was always favorably disposed to all of her husbands, equally well disposed to his relatives. She served his friends. That's the karma. Then what else? A chaste woman must dress nicely and decorate herself with golden ornaments for the pleasure of her husband. Always wearing clean and attractive garments, she should sweep and clean the household and water with water and other liquids so that the entire house is always pure and clean. She should collect the household paraphernalia and keep the house always aromatic with incense and flowers, and must be ready to execute the desires of her husband. Being modest and truthful, controlling her senses and speaking in sweet words, a chaste woman should engage in the service of her husband with love, according to time and circumstances. So her only duty is to serve her husband, whatever he tells her. But one important point Prabhupada makes at the beginning is, she should dress nicely and decorate herself. Bhakti Vidyapurna Swami told me one time that a Bengali lady told him, the problem with the women in ISKCON is that the unmarried women dress as if they're married, and the married women dress as if they're widows. They don't dress nicely. They dress in dish rags. No, the married women should look like goddesses. They should look, according to the circumstance, the capacity of the husband, they should dress very nicely. Isn't it? It says right here, with gold, with garment, whatever, for the pleasure of the husband. So that the husband is attracted to her. Right? That is how they should dress, not as if they're widows. And of course, women like that. They like to dress up, no matter how old they are. I was seeing the temple president in Bangalore, is Bharata Krishna. He's got a little daughter, Mitravati, 5 or 6 years old. She's always like, she's showing her new earrings, she's showing her new bangles, her new ankle bells. She's only 5 years old, but she's happy. Every time she gets new jewelry, she's showing it off because girls like these things. So the women will also be happy if they can dress nicely. They'll be that's their bhava. They like that. So the husband should provide. That's it. Not only does he protects, he has to provide for the wife. He has to provide. So the austerity of the woman, and she has to tolerate whatever the husband can provide. She has to accept, be satisfied with whatever he can provide, because he might not be able to provide very much, like Sudama Vipra. But she still has to be tolerant and accept that, be satisfied, whatever. But to the capacity that they can, they should dress nicely. And this is, a chaste woman should not be greedy, but satisfied in all circumstances. She must be very expert in handling household affairs and should be fully conversant with religious principles. She should speak pleasingly and truthfully and should be very careful and always clean and pure. Thus, a chaste woman should engage with affection in the service of a husband who is not fallen. So she should be expert in handling household affairs. So one of the things that the husband does is he puts her in charge of the money. The household budget is there. He gives her enough money so she runs the household. Just like the Pandavas. Draupadi ran the whole palace. Thousands, tens of thousands of servants. She had a huge budget. Many crores of rupees she was managing. This way the husband keeps her occupied. Now it says here, important part, affection in the, she should engage in the, with affection in the service of a husband who is not fallen. Now what does fallen mean? Well, he's not chanting his rounds? Or he's, what does it mean? Is it any, you can just take any excuse and then not, like, well, he's not a devotee, or I'm not going to serve my husband. One of my god sisters told me, she was, what's her name now? I just forgot her name. She was one of the first Indian Matajis who joined. She was from Vrindavan. The last time I saw her alive, she told me something that just shocked me. I didn't know that she had been married before. She had been married before to an Indian gentleman, but he wasn't a devotee. He wasn't following the regulated principles. So he wanted so many things. So she went to Srila Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, what should I do? My husband, he doesn't want to follow the regulated principles. He wants to drink, he wants sex, he wants so many things. What should I do? So she told me that Prabhupada told her, do what your mother trained you to do. Serve your husband. So why would Prabhupada say that? Why would he tell? He knows he's going to want to drink. He may want some meat eating. He may want more sex. So many things. Why would Prabhupada tell her to serve her husband? Because she won't get the karma. As explained by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, verse 1847, it is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one may perform it imperfectly, than to accept another's occupation and perform it perfectly. Duties prescribed according to one's nature are never affected by sinful reactions. So her duty is to serve her husband. Her husband wants to drink, she serves him. Her husband tells her to drink, she drinks. She doesn't get the reaction. Because it's not that. Now if she wants to drink, then she gets the reaction. But her husband tells her to drink, she doesn't get the reaction. I had a client like that. Telugu lady. She wanted to be a vegetarian. Her husband wants her to cook meat. I said, okay, cook. He also wants me to eat it. Eat it. You don't get the reaction. He gets the reaction. Now, if she wants to eat meat, she gets the reaction. But if her husband tells her to eat meat and she doesn't want to, then she doesn't get the reaction. So anyway, back to the story. So Prabhupada told her, just serve your husband. But then Prabhupada left. and she was in New York City. And all her God sisters who didn't know anything, they were just very new. They didn't know about Krishna's Vedic cultures. They were all saying, oh, your husband's a demon. He's not a devotee. You should leave him. You should marry a devotee. So she did. She did. Prabhupada wasn't there. She did that. She left her husband and married another man. And the last thing she told me, to this very day, I regret disobeying Srila Prabhupada. To this day. He told her, don't leave your husband, even though he's not a devotee, even though he wants you to perform sinful. See, it may affect her consciousness, but she doesn't get the karma. It's like, you know, if the wife has to cook meat, it's awful, but she doesn't get any karma. It may disturb her mind, she doesn't get the karma. So she said, to that day, she regretted. Her name is Sunita. That's her name, Sunita. Now, of course, you know, there are limits. And if the wife, if she can't tolerate it, then she can leave. Just like in the case of Sambhavoma Bhattacharya. The husband was fallen. Amoga. Because he blasphemed the Lord. So he told his daughter, you come home, you're a widow now. That's fallen. Not that he's a meat eater, that's not fallen. He's an atheist. That's a different thing. He told her, you come home, we consider him dead, don't be with your husband anymore. But if, you know, if the husband's a serial killer, you know, a murderer, then that's a different, you know, there are limitations. You have to, you know, there are always exceptions to every rule. But we're speaking in general principles now. Now, oh, the last verse. The woman who engages in the service of her husband, following strictly in the footsteps of the goddess of fortune, surely returns home back to Godhead with her devotee husband and lives very happily in the Vaikuntha planets. In this verse, in the purport, Prabhupada quotes Madhvacharya, who says the following. A woman should think of her husband as the Supreme Lord. Similarly, a disciple should think of the spiritual master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A shudra should think of a brahmana as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And a servant should think of his master as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this way, all of them will automatically become devotees of the Lord. In other words, by thinking this way, all of them will become Krishna conscious. The important point is that no matter what service we do, because sometimes whatever service you do may be difficult, we have to do it to please Krishna. Right? That's called Daivi Varnashram. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna succinctly describes Varnashram, then he describes Daivi Varnashram. The only difference between is that in Daivi Varnashram you do the same duty, but you do it to please Krishna. He explains it. He said, every endeavor is covered with some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of faults. So there's going to be a problem in marriage, in married life. But you do it to please Krishna. Just like, and we're not just talking about something from the past, different from the distant past. We're talking about in recent history. Srila Prabhupada's own sister did not have a happy marriage. Right? Her husband was a meat eater. He was a drunkard. He was a womanizer. And whatever money was left over, he was a gambler. What woman would like such a situation? Right? So what did Prabhupada tell her? Did he tell her to leave your husband? Did he tell her to go to the women's ministry? Did he tell her to get some marriage counseling? No, he told her this material problem, spiritual solution. He told her, you get our deities of Radha Krishna. When they were young, they had deities. You get those deities. You worship those deities. And you pray for the benefit of your husband. Just do that. Didn't say do it for 5 months or 6 months. Just do it. So she did that. She prayed for the welfare of her husband. After some time, the husband began to see, this woman only has my best interest at heart. And then gradually, because she went to the highest authority, Radha and Krishna. So, as one friend of mine, he's a top book distributor in England. He said his tactic for distributing books was that it's me and my super soul and his super soul against him. He's outnumbered 3-1. He loses every time. So she has her Radha Krishna and his super soul, and he's finished, you know. So after some time, he began to change his ways. He gave up his bad habits, and then he began to worship his wife. That is how Prabhupada says the wife conquers her husband by her humility. So in the next verse, Prabhupada says, Vyasadeva says, no, Krishna then says, he says here, there's, what's that one verse? Okay, right. By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all-pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. So by performing your own duty to please Krishna, then this is Daivi Varnashram. As Prabhupada writes in the purport, everyone should think that he is engaged in a particular type of occupation by Hrishikesh, the master of the senses. So, In any ashram, but particularly we're speaking about the Grihastha ashram, that the wife, she is serving the husband to please who? To please Krishna. She's taking care of her children to please who? To please Krishna. The husband, he is taking care of his ashram, he's working to please who? To please Krishna. So even if there may be some difficulty, I'm not doing this to please this man, I'm not doing this to please this woman, I'm doing this to please Krishna. And this, if you keep it at that level, then people can, they'll be able to go through it. Because they're not doing it for some material purpose, they're doing it to please Krishna. That is Daivi Varnashram. You're doing whatever duties you have to please Krishna. The mother is changing the diaper of her baby to please Krishna. That's Daivi Varnashram. Yeah, that's Krishna conscious. That is the difference between ordinary Varnashram and Varnashram. That is how, because there's bound to be some difficulties in life. Guaranteed. Some difficulty. So one time, Draupadi was criticizing Yudhishthira. She was making some sarcastic remarks because they were living in the forest. She was saying how, just see, you're following Dharma, where did it get you? We're living in the forest. This Duryodhan, he doesn't follow Dharma, he's got the kingdom. She went on and on speaking like this. Then Yudhishthir, he said, you've spoken very nicely, very poetically, articulate, but everything you're saying is atheism. Because I don't follow Dharma to achieve any purpose. I do it to please Krishna. I'm following Dharma because Dharma should be followed to please Krishna. Not so that I achieve a kingdom. I'm doing it so that Krishna is pleased. Like that. So, very nice example of how, you know, from superior personalities, how to behave is shown in the pastimes of Sita and Ram. When Agastya Rishi sent Ram to the Dandakaranya forest to kill the Rakshasas, as they were walking there, Sita, she didn't think it was a good idea. But how did she approach Ram? Did she say, you stupid, what are you listening to him for? We just met him and now you're getting us in trouble, you go kill people we don't even know? Did she say like that? You listen to me, I know what I'm saying. Did she go like that? No. Sita said, my dear, with very sweet words, she said, my dear husband, I am just an unintelligent woman, but I think it's a good idea that we should go there and kill these people. We don't know them. They didn't do anything to hurt us. And she spoke very nicely, you know, because she loved her husband. So how did Ram react? What did he say? Oh, you stupid woman, what do you know? You're less intelligent because you're a woman? 32 ounces? No. He said he was so happy because he was seeing that you were expressing your love for me so much. She was so, because her expression was so beautiful that he felt her great love the way she did it. But then he said, but you're wrong. And he explained why it was wrong. And then they were very happy. They had a disagreement, but it turned into a very nice pastime. Though they disagreed, you know, everything went nicely. So that's how we should, that is the standard that we should be. If the wife recognizes the superior position of the husband, but the husband, just because he's in a superior position, doesn't mean he should take advantage. You should never, ever take advantage of those who are dependent on you. Because though the wife may not get the karma, you will get the karma. The husband will get the karma for doing that. Have no doubt about that. Anybody who abuses their position, anybody who abuses their position of responsibility will get punished. Should have no doubt. Just because, you know, the wife is supposed to be submissive, doesn't mean we torture the wife. The husband should protect the wife. He should be thinking only of her well-being, what's beneficial for her. She's the other half of his body. Anyway, thank you for allowing me this opportunity to purify myself by speaking about the Bhagavatam. Any questions? Comments? One question. Give him the microphone. Can you speak a little louder? Yeah, Pati Guru. Dharma Patni and Pati Guru.
In case the spiritual master is not following the sadhana,
So you were asking the question, since if the wife is not willing to be protected, actually what it is not the fact that he's a spiritual master, it's the fact that the wife doesn't want to be protected. That's what the actual issue is. Because even if he's an atheist, even if they're Buddhists, you know, or whatever, or like Ravana, his wife was following him. She was willing to be protected. So what the real situation is, the husband can reject his wife if she doesn't want to be protected by him. So you're asking the question, and what condition, what circumstances can the wife reject the husband? That's your question, right? Okay, so I was just speaking on general principles, but Manu does describe certain situations in which the wife can reject the husband. For example, if there's fraud in the marriage, because it's a contract. So, what if the husband is, if the wife is young and he's impotent, the wife can reject and marry again, no problem. If the husband performs a crime, causing him to lose his caste, she can reject him. You know, I'll give you one case that was brought to my advice. To adjudicate this case. One guru had a problem. His disciples, they got married. Shortly after the marriage, the girl found out that her husband was having long time sexual affair with his aunt, his own auntie. This is in South India. So, what did I advise? I said, for two reasons, she can reject this man and remarry with no blemish. First of all, fraud. He never told her he's having a relationship with another woman. Second of all, the woman is his aunt. That is a great sin. You're having sex with your aunt, your mother's sister. So I said, she can reject this man and remarry with no blemish on her part. She can reject the husband because he's having an affair and remarry with no blemish. No blemish. No fault on her part. She can remarry, she has no fault because the husband, she wants to remarry, she can remarry. She can reject the husband and remarry. If she wanted to. She had nobody, was it? She can reject the husband and remarry somebody else. She has to select herself. Some other husband has to be selected. But there was not that there was somebody else there, because he had done two very great things here. He had deceived the woman at the beginning, not revealing this relationship, and plus he's having a relationship with his mother's sister, which is a horrible thing. So in such a situation, Mana says, that man can be rejected. Yeah, but these are exceptions. Exceptions to the rule must be exceptional, not whimsical. That's what an exception to the rule means. It has to be exceptional. According to Mimamsa. That answer your question. There are other things, you know. You have to read Manu Samhita. It's explained there. In Manu gives all these things. But it's not something common. Alright, any other questions? Rakesh has a question. Mataji has a question. Mataji has a question. They have equal opportunity. I can't hear what you're saying. Can you speak a little louder? You said the husband. Yes.
Yes. That's who the husband is. Yes. What? I can't understand what you're saying. Yeah. Because she's seeing him as a representative of Krishna. Because she's seeing that he is the representative of Krishna. That if she's treating him as good as God, I mean, she has to see him as the representative of Krishna to her. The king is a representative of God to the people, not a deity, isn't it? The king is considered to be the representative of God. The husband is considered to be the representative of God. So she's seeing that this person has been sent to me by God. He is the representative of God. That is the husband that God gave her. At the time of birth, the astrologer can see what kind of husband she'll get. Advanced or not advanced. She has to practice. You can only get into the spiritual world if you have one qualification. You have to have the service attitude. So this is the man Krishna has chosen for you to practice on. Practice serving him. Then you please him, you please Krishna. Now another thing, a more high esoteric point, that sometimes if the husband is not good, the wife should not criticize. I gave one reason. Another more esoteric reason is, if the wife gets upset and she's saying this is injustice, she will never be able to go to the spiritual world, because, well, how will she feel when Krishna is with another woman? Huh? If in the spiritual world Krishna is with one gopi, he says he's going to be with one gopi, then he's with another gopi. Will the gopis get upset?
No.
So it's practice for that also. But that's more esoteric. If she gets upset, then how she'll deal with Krishna? Because Krishna is very fickle. He goes here, he goes there. He's got so many different places. So that also is training the mind. Krishna said, but of course, there are certain cutoff points. If the husband is too much, then the wife can leave, stay with the father, you know, not remarry, unless there's certain conditions. Okay. Any other? I couldn't understand. What did she say? Come out the mic. Come here. Come closer.
Speak without the mic.
It's too much reverb. No, now I can't hear at all. Okay. Najanam, najanam, nasundarim. Yeah, okay. That's what you're talking about, right? That verse from Shikshashtaka? Okay. So what is the question? Grihastha ashram requires wealth. To be a grihastha means you need money. That's just the facts of life. Like one time one person consulted me, he says your fees are too high. He says he wanted to consult me about marriage. He says if you can't afford me, you can't afford to get married. I told him, Grihastha ashram means money is required. That is a requirement. But enough money, not that you become greedy for money, enough money to do your duty. If you have any more questions, I'll answer them later. Okay, Rakesh, your question.
Children may not be so much in quantity, and
Yeah.
So, and many people are saying, you know, they say they are young.
Yeah.
They say, I want to serve Prabhupada. Then my time will be less to serve the service. They are getting married, but not having children. So, this is only about it. Not for them, that is, I have to answer.
Putrahina. Okay, so you're saying that some people, they're not having children, whereas the Muslims are having many children, and etc., etc., right? What is it good? Is it good not to have children? Well, there's a saying, putrahina grihashunya. Without any children, the house is zero. This propaganda, not having children, is not from Shastra, it's from the government. They are under the illusion that there's overpopulation. As Prabhupada pointed out, it's not that it's overpopulated, but it's undermanaged. Not, the wealth is not managed properly. And it's when your grandparents, say your father, how many brothers your father had?
My father?
Yeah.
Three brothers.
Or your grandparents, they had many, many children were there, right? So when the parents got old, everybody could take care. But now, everybody's only having one or two children. So when the parents get old, great burden is on the children. Is the government going to help? Is the government going to help you? No. The government is telling you not to have children, but when you get old, the government is not going to help you. Your children will help you, but not the government. So you just ignore the government. Forget the government, because the government is not going to help you. The Muslims have got it right. Their children are able to help them when they grow old, but not the government. Sure, so Grihastha, they should have children.
Like probably there are now many young devotees getting married,
yeah.
And they have a claim that once they have children, their time will be used also to, you know, bring up children, and they can spend less time for doing devotional practical service to ISKCON. So they are saying that they don't want to have children, but they just want to stay as husband and wife. So is that okay, or is that?
No, that's they should have children. Otherwise, they shouldn't get married. Otherwise, how? If they didn't have children, imagine Prabhupada wouldn't have been born. Bhakti Vinod Thakur had 14 children, two wives, and many children, and many were great devotees. Bhakti Siddhanta. That's the whole. You know, in such families, great devotees are born. If you don't have children, you know, you go from Brahmacharya. You know, Grihastha ashram, there should be children, unless there's some medical reason. That is service. You're bringing in great souls. You create an opportunity for great souls to take birth. And you're raising that devotee. That's service. And you do it to please Krishna. That's also service. Who's going to be the future? That's Prabhu. Yeah.
Said that once Prabhupada narrated that the purpose of Grihastha life is to create Krishna conscious child.
Yes. Exactly. To create more devotees. It's a bhakta program. It's a long term bhakta program. All right. Oh, one last question. Okay. Yeah. Yes, he's right. Rendrashima Bhagavan Kijai. Kijai. Okay, what is your question?
There are some devotees.
Yeah.
They don't want to join Brahmacharya Ashram.
Yeah.
Because there are so many rules and regulations. They have to get a morning program,
so many things. Yeah, yeah.
The second part, they don't want to marry also. Because if you marry, then you have so many responsibilities.
Uh-huh.
So they want in between Ashram. No, they don't want to marry also, they don't want to...
But they have girlfriends? They have girlfriends?
Huh?
What do they do?
They are just like, you know, bachelor daddies. So what?
Or bachelor daddies.
So what will happen to them?
They are what?
These are bachelor daddies.
They're not daddies. They didn't marry, no?
No, bachelor.
They didn't marry, so how can
bachelor
they be
daddy? You don't have to be married to have children these days, you know what I mean?
That's what you mean?
That's what you mean? That what you mean?
Yeah.
What do you mean? They're having girlfriends, but no wife. then they make slow progress.
I don't know.
They don't want to marry and they don't want to. They are not so serious.
They're struggling. They're devotees, but they're not following properly. So you shouldn't give them your association, but don't take their association. You can engage them. Eventually, gradually, they become more serious. You have to start someplace. That's not in vain. The service they do is not in vain. Well, I guess we could turn this off.